I will call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting on this Tuesday, the 14th of August. Please join the board as we honor our nation with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Greetings to everyone. Seems like we've enjoyed a few cool spells and a little rain. It's always enjoyable this time of year. Item 3 on the agenda is the opportunity for public comments on items that is on today's agenda. Is there anyone that wanted to address the board regarding a topic on today's agenda? Okay, seeing no one, we'll move on to consideration of the minutes of 7/31/12 and 8/7/12.
Move approval.
Second. It's been moved and second. The approval of the minutes with no additions or corrections. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carries. Thank you. Personnel action. There is a second item that was added, which is the transfer to the Treasurer's Office from the Sheriff Department, just a simple personnel transfer that should be added under the action form for personnel.
Move personnel action items with noted change.
Second. It's been moved and second. The approval of personnel action with noted change. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carries. Thank you. And then a consideration of claims. Again, we have them all there.
I don't know what we're going to do if it was over a million today, because I've vowed to never move claims over a million. It's under a million, so I'll move it. I'll move approval of claims.
Okay, and I will second that. It's always good when we don't have a lot of them, that's for sure. Hearing no other comments, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carries. Claims are approved. Okay, and then on the consent agenda, we need to add one road closure, number 1315. All other items are set to go.
Move consent agenda.
It's been, and I will second it, it's been moved and seconded, the approval of the consent agenda with the noted change. Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton? Aye. Consent agenda is adopted. Okay, we're moving along here. Okay, under 8, no other reports, public hearing, none. Additional items. Today we have a discussion and consideration of Information Technology Department restructure. Both Alyssa Wignall and Barb Steinbeck, our new IT director, so come on down or come up forward there and welcome. I'm sure you've been quite busy, Barbara, in your brief time.
I have.
Could be, hopefully.
Yeah, they're on.
Great.
Okay. This item was actually put on the board agenda. There is a vacancy in IT. The webmaster resigned the end of June.
Hmm?
And I've been working with Barb to figure out what type of a position that she needs to fill the void in her department. So that's what this about. The position that is budgeted is not the position that she would like to fill. And I'll go ahead and let her explain why she wants to fill it with a network administrator instead of a webmaster.
Okay.
Well, previously, the webmaster, as you know, massaged the website, and with the implementation of Civic Plus, the duties have really scaled back tremendously. There's no longer creating items on Civic Plus, and also there were certain members from each department that also went to the training so that you could push back some of the responsibility for items on the website to the different departments, you know, to post their own things. So IT's role has been more of guiding and tweaking and not a full-time implementation job. With the current projects in the future, for example, the DOT project with the fiber and with the budgeted implementation of several new switches and replacing networking items, and my desires to increase security on our network increase availability, implement some wireless solutions. I feel that a network administrator would suit our future plans much better than a webmaster.
We're still going to have the opportunity to have somebody in IT hold the hands of those of us who are trying to use Civic Plus?
Paula and I have been trading off and doing that, yes.
I kind of like the way you stated that.
Yes.
Those of us.
And Matt Emerson has graciously answered a few of our questions when we're trying to stumble along. Civic Plus does have excellent tutorials, and their help desk has helped us also. So we've been very pleased with their response to our needs.
Right. Good. What challenges, if any, do you see in trying to fill this position?
I see the challenge in finding somebody who is capable from this area. I think our biggest pool of applicants will come from the Des Moines area. As far as education and experience, I think we've got, from what I've seen in past positions I've tried to fill, there is a good mix of people who do have the right qualifications. So possibly salary may be a consideration. This is a very challenging type of field of work, and it does require constant training and recertification as things change and security changes. So that may be our challenge.
Well, thank you. I guess I certainly do want to acknowledge and appreciate both your involvement and Alyssa's, that when, you know, we come to a staff situation like this, that we have an opportunity not only to review the current makeup and then looking at trying to look at existing staff to see if anyone internally can fill that void or if we need some other outside specialties in that area. And I think that the recommendation that you bring forth clearly indicates that this could continue to enhance our ability to provide quality service not only internally but to the citizens of Story County as well. So I guess with that, what do you need from us at this point, Alyssa?
You'll have to, it's a consideration, you'll have to approve authorizing the network administrator position to fill the webmaster, because there is one.
It is a change.
It is a change. The webmaster is graded at a grade 12. This new position is a 13, so there is a little bit of a salary difference. The former webmaster was making at the low end of the hiring range for this position, so it's going to depend upon the applicants as to what we actually have to pay to get somebody in there. But the current budget has a little bit on the lower end of the hiring range. So that might be something you need to take into consideration later on in the fiscal year.
So right now, and I just want to understand this, right now we have two positions in IT that are not filled, but we've only budgeted for one of them. One
Correct.
Of them is the webmaster, and the other one was the assistant director. Is it our intention to remove these two positions from our structure, or keep them out there and just not have any dollars budgeted for either of these positions?
I think you can replace the webmaster with this position.
So the webmaster
wouldn't do
would
anything
go
with
away,
the other one. Yep.
The assistant director would remain and just have no dollars tied to it.
Correct.
Okay. And in rough dollars, what is the salary range of the current webmaster position?
The current one when he left was about $61,000.
Okay.
And that's what the hiring range for this position is, $60,000 to $70,000.
And what's it going to take to hire somebody, Barb? Best guess.
Say $70,000.
Okay, so we've got a $9,000 difference there that we've got to find a way to make up. Where is that money going to come from? I know you're just getting into your budget, but I hate making changes and going to try to find dollars somewhere else. So I'm asking you, as you go into this process, do you think you're going to be able to identify funds within the IT budget to handle this additional?
I think it's possible, yes. We can do that.
Okay. Alyssa, have you identified anywhere else that
we did have this position's been making, probably won't really be filled until October. The applications, the deadline's the 31st of August by the time you do interviews. So you have a few months of the old webmaster's salary. At budget time, the board did say when the new director came on board that they would have to relook at that because of the staffing situation and possibly take a look at the budget.
Well, as I recall, when we talked about a new director, we recognized that we wanted somebody in there who was going to structure that as it went. I'm just trying to figure out, is this more of an FY14 issue that we're dealing with or an FY13
issue? It won't fall that. With this range and the vacancy for a few months, you won't fall very short in FY13, but next year you will have the full salary of that.
Right. And I think it's important, again, to acknowledge that this was a discussion during the budgeting session. Mm-hmm. And at that time when we talked about either not funding the assistant position fully there, we kind of lowered the amount as to what we thought we would still be able to attract someone depending upon what changed. So I anticipated that with the new director coming on board that there may be a need for us to revisit this. So I think it is appropriate, but I think Supervisor Sanders raises some very key questions that, and one of those is anytime we can generate cost savings within a department would be our preference rather than having to, you know, go elsewhere if we need an additional sum of dollars to put. But I think as we work with you through the process, through the course of the year, we may be able to identify some additional savings as we go on. Good. Okay.
All right, with that, I just stop me if this is not what we need, but I would move the creation of a network administrator position and the elimination of the webmaster position from our structure.
And I will second that motion. Okay. Are there further discussion? Okay. Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carries.
Thanks.
And thank you. Great. Okay. All right. Agency report. Okay. Eileen Mullen, Homewirt.
Hi.
How are you?
Hi, welcome.
I'm good, thank you. Eileen Mullen, Homewirt. This is my annual report. And let me orient myself to this. Okay, I always like to start with this familiar slide to show you what our programs are at Homewirt. And through the county, the asset program, all of these are somehow funded except for the Israel Family Hospice House. So hospice, our home care program, is where the majority of our patients are because people do want to stay in the home. And bereavement is offered a year past the passing of the individual who is in hospice. We have the homemaker program, which we keep seeing increased need for the homemaker program. We have Lifeline, Meals on Wheels, skilled home health. That is the programs where it requires a physician to give an order for someone to have that service, and it can be nursing, physical therapy, home care aides, several different components there. Then the public health side, we have over the years put seen our roles change, and we'll keep seeing that change as public health is redefined and emergency preparedness has become quite a big part of it. Senior health clinics, immunizations, of course, are big. Disease surveillance is very big. TB and lead control, parenting classes, and Alzheimer's support. So just these three things are what I just wanted to bring forward today is what's kept us busy this past year. And with pertussis, you've heard about that in the news, and since April we've had 74 cases. 74 is a lot, and we continue to see that come forward. The piece that is the disease surveillance with that is what's really time-consuming. So like with every case, you have at least 20 or more individuals that we have to follow up on, and then also a week or two later contact them all again. So it's taken a lot of our efforts. We were hoping pertussis would die down in the before school starts, but it hasn't, so here we go. Tuberculosis, this is an interesting year. We've had 8 active TB cases, which is quite significant. 6 of these have been outside of the United States, and because we have a university here, that's probably one of the reasons. Active TB cases, of course, are the ones we're concerned about. It takes 9 to 10 months to treat those. Interestingly, two of those cases, they had spinal TB, and so it's very concerning that if it becomes up into the lungs, that's when it becomes an infectious situation in a very severe. These were severe because these were resistant to the typical kind of treatment. So the Iowa Department of Public Health was very concerned about this. They gave us $2,500 for each of those cases so that we would manage that well. What that meant is that we needed to go into their home every day for 10 months to watch them take their medications and make sure that they were following the appropriate protocols so that this would not become something that would spread. Interestingly, one of the cases, as you see there, is cost around $44,000, so $2,500 doesn't even come close. And we're somewhat concerned that we're going to see more of this coming forward. Changes with public health emergency planning. In the last 5 years, we have been focusing on planning for emergencies. Moving forward, the feds and the state are changing it from preparedness to more of a partnership development. So in the next 5 years, there'll be some changes going on, significant ones within the first year here. In the first year, we're going to be, a little history, public health and hospitals both receive a grant every year for emergency preparedness. Moving forward, we will not receive our individual grants. It will be a coalition that receives the grants. We anticipate in a few years there won't be any grant dollars. So we're developing these coalitions. And in doing that, we started out by the two hospitals here in the county and public health and emergency manager getting together and saying, what's our strengths, where's our gaps? We're trying to come together on that, and we have already set up some meetings now with some other counties, with their hospitals, with their public health, with their emergency managers and so forth, so that we can start having discussions, will we be good partners, should we be partners? And we have just learned that we don't have to really partner with another county. We can, if we feel we have partnerships within our own county that will make sustain us, then that's acceptable. I doubt if we'll do that. So at this point in time, our preliminary discussions in a few weeks will be with Boone, Hardin, Marshall, Webster, and Hamilton. And we'll identify what our strengths and gaps are. We'll do more on that later and then bring our recommendations to the Board of Health. So our home health key focus this year has been keeping people healthy and out of the hospital and helping clients remain in their home. And we do that, as I showed you, through our programs through a variety of ways. And you can see here are some of the numbers that we've had in our clinics. The senior health clinic, the child immunization, and Alzheimer's support numbers have keep growing every year, and that's probably not a surprise. Other support services are the Meals on Wheels and Lifeline, and we continue to serve a solid number of individuals through those programs. And we continue to do evaluations to make sure that people are getting the nutrition and feel like that their meals have accomplished what we hope. Other ways that we're keeping people out of the hospital is we've created a transitional care program. Last year when I talked to the board, I talked about a medication reconciliation that we were doing with all patients that come out of the hospital, or at least select identified ones. We're expanding that, and so that we're visiting all patients who have congestive heart failure, acute MIs, pneumonias, and COPD, pulmonary disease, and anybody else that physicians recommend to us. With those visits, and again, they're free of charge, we are not only going to do med reconciliation, which is where we're making sure that they have the right medications that the doctor had ordered, and it's surprising how many errors we have found. And so helping to work through that, we're going to reinforce education because as often, if any of you have had loved ones or yourself been in the hospital, it's overwhelming and they forget. And so we'll reinforce that. We'll make sure they're going to the physician, they have an appointment, that they have a ride, and we'll make sure their environment's safe. And these are pretty huge. This probably takes about a couple of hours of our nurses' time. This is a form just to, again, to show what we have done to help the client stay out of the hospital. This one happens to be on obstructive pulmonary disease. We want them to stay in the green zone, and if they're in the green zone, they see what they should be feeling like. If they're getting into the yellow zone and have any of those symptoms, they're to give us a call, and hopefully we can bring them back into the green zone. And then if they're in the red, they need to immediately call for services. And we found these have been successful. Home health compares when you get on the Medicare website, and you can compare the outcomes of our organization with any in the county or the United States. And just wanted to show that they are also very much into preventing hospitalizations because we know that when you go back in the hospital, you're prone to get sicker. So, and it's very expensive. So homeward, just showing that we're lower is better, and therefore we're doing very well compared to the state and the national. Okay, home health, average daily census. You don't need to respond, but you can just make a guess there what you think it might be. This is what how many patients we see average every day. It's 120. And that was just the nursing component. This is the homemakers. So these can be for environmental or personal care. Again, you can just make a guess. Good job. I have no treats. Of the current home health clients, which represents the longest length of stay? Those are the ones that are being seen by a nurse or a therapist.
I go with the high number.
What? You've been around a while. 11 years. That's good. No, that's the high one. 11 years. Isn't that something? Homemade clients, the longest length of stay.
Past and due.
19 years. So they're pretty happy that we're keeping them out of nursing homes. Yeah. And last, you've had this explained to you, probably through Deb Schildroth and other presentations, but Story County Quality of Life Alliance, we brought that together after the community needs assessment and developed goals for the county. And this is a coalition or an alliance of coalitions and organizations. What we're doing is focusing on the goals for Story County and keeping the community health needs assessment in front of us and looking at how we can do more together and not be creating duplication. You can't read that very well, but it shows the structure. The leadership is several individuals in the county who are put the agendas together, make sure we're moving forward. The coalitions are on the left, the partners are on the right. And we've already identified a couple times when we have had some overlapping and have pulled together, working more together. And we're using this alliance also for grant dollars, to get grant dollars. The goals, just to bring them forward, that we're actively working on in this alliance is increase access to behavioral health, oral health care, and prenatal care services by getting a community health center. We have not succeeded so far in getting the grant dollars for that, but we're not stopping, and we're going to keep moving forward. Decrease negative consequences and outcomes of high-risk alcohol use. ISU took the lead on that, but again, through this alliance, we're looking how we can work together in the whole county with some other areas besides students. ISU is working on increased reporting of sexual assault and decreased sexual violence. They believe that if they increase the reporting, that they have a better opportunity of decreasing the violence, the assaults. And then adequate behavioral health care, you and the board are very aware of this progress or lack of. We have a website, and I just bring that forward. You can go on there and see the coalitions and what's going on.
You're true that if you eat an apple a day, you'll keep the doctor away?
I think so.
Oh, gosh.
I'd go for it.
No wonder I haven't been doing it.
I better bring you some apples.
All right. Well, thank you so much, and thank you for what Homeward provides for our community. It's truly a pleasure. Okay, moving on, our departmental report. We have County Engineer Darren Moon. Welcome.
Darren, you know how to pack them in.
I'll go right ahead.
Last time you were sitting there, we had a full house.
Oh, you bet. All right, go Cyclones.
Okay, good morning.
Morning.
Let me start out a little bit and talk about our dry conditions we've been having this summer. For the most part, dry conditions are good for our roads and getting road construction done. There's a couple drawbacks to the dry conditions, and this is the major one here. I'm showing a picture of some washboarding. It's so weather-dependent. There's only so much we can do with it. A lot of residents think it's a lack of maintenance. That's just not true. We do what we can with them, but the only way to really fix this is to cut it deep, and that what that does is mixes up material, and if you don't have rain the day before or something, it will not compact. It'll make it 10 times worse the next day. But the more traffic you have, the worse the washboards are going to be. But we've had some rain this past week or two, and we get out to them as quick as we can, but you got to remember we have 70 plus miles in each district. They go 4 miles an hour when they blade roads. They have to go both directions. That's 140 miles at 4 miles per hour, so you really can't get through that in a week. So to catch every road right after rain is nearly impossible, but we're hitting the higher traffic roads first and doing what we can with what the weather conditions give us. Another drawback of this summer was the heat, intense heat, and that can cause some... Well, I try to think of some positive about the dust. If you're an artist, you can do something like that on the back of your vehicle, but I'm sure none of you have had any complaints about dust this summer. This is what the heat can do. Mostly on our PC roads, our Portland cement concrete roads, they expand when they get that hot. And you get those really hot 100-degree days. This is on R70 south of Highway 30. That's 2 to 3 foot high that blew up. So that's we got to close those roads immediately and start patching work. We did another major concrete patch in front of Martin Marietta Riverside. That wasn't so much due to the heat. The pavement just broke up enough with all the truck traffic. We had to get on that pretty quickly. But that was a major PC patch. Our asphalt, we have mostly asphalt roads, so we don't have a lot of this problem on those, but when asphalt's placed over the top of PC, we have the bumps come up through, and the worst one was E29 over the Marshall County line. Those were up a good 3 inches, so that had to be addressed quickly, too. So we got our new skid loader this year, and so we rented the mill with a mill head on it to mill those bumps off, and while we had it rented, we hit a bunch of other roads, Lincoln Highway, GW Carver, and it does help to mill those bumps off. Our maintenance crews have gotten a lot done with the weather conditions, allowed us to get a lot of road work done. This is one project we did put in the riprap. This is Skunk River on the gravel road out to the Ames Water Treatment Plant. Had a huge scoury hole here that was endangering our abutment on this bridge. So City of Nevada was doing some concrete removal, so we got a bunch of free concrete from City of Nevada and hauled it to this location, so that was a much-needed project. One of the last high-priority items after the flooding in the past few years, so we were able to get that done. This is some of the typical work we've been doing on our gravel roads, improving. This is 663rd, south of Maxwell, right in front of Sandra Hunter's house, if you know where she lives. It's probably one of the worst roads we had like this. The road itself was actually the ditch. There was no ditch. The road acted as a drainage, so it would wash the gravel off. You can see where we cut new ditches and build up the road, so we have a higher road.
How much of an area did you have to go in and reconstruct there? Is it just, was it somewhat confined to just this one area?
It's bits and pieces. We addressed the whole mile, but you can see front yards and stuff. Where we didn't have to adjust the vegetation, we didn't. We left it there. But this area is the driveway here. We were able to put a culvert in because we raised the road. There was no culvert there before, so the water just washed over the driveway and washed out every time we got a big rain. But you can see where we built the road up and made ditches where there was no ditches before at all. So that's some of the type of work we're doing out there. And the residents along the road really appreciate it. We work real closely with the residents to make sure they're aware of what's...
Had a resident make a special trip up here to see us, and I happened to be the one that he saw come in to compliment you guys on this. So that's really, really nice. If you guys are doing a good enough job that somebody's going to take time out of their day to come by and compliment, usually it goes the other way for us. People want to stop by when they're not happy.
Yeah. Good. The one drawback we've had to all our work is it does require an increase of seeding, and this is one of the smaller jobs we had out there, but this is what you get, a lot of weeds growing up if you don't get it seeded, and we're working with... Historically, IRVM's done all of our seeding work for us, and we're working with Mike Cox of Conservation to come up with a plan to try to catch up on these. There's one thing farmers hate, it's weeds. So this got mowed not too long after this picture, because if you don't get it seeded and control the weeds, you're going to have to get out there and get it mowed before you can ever see it again, too. So we're trying to address that issue. We had Ragbrite come through 2-3 weeks ago. A lot of riders came through. I wanted to point out we did this across the 18. We had some pretty good bumps in the road that were dips, so we filled them with this slurry mix, and we were able to get that done before Ragbrite came through. But this was also in preparation. This road gets overlaid next summer, and we that'll level it out before we do the overlay anyway, so this is something that needed to be done regardless. We did a full slurry over the interstate. There was about a half mile there that was in real bad shape, so we slurried the entire roadway there. So that helped that stretch, too. But there was no incidents with Ragbrite coming through Story County anyway, so that was a good deal. Wanted to touch base on Highway 69. This is a DOT project, but it has a major impact on county roads. The project will be completed hopefully by the end of August, so that'll take some of the pressure off. But I contacted the DOT about a month before the project started and saying, hey, have you considered the gravel roads and dust control? And they really hadn't, so at that time they agreed to do some dust control. They did some on Grant before the project started up to Gilbert. But after a week or two, they could see how bad it really did get, and they were expecting most of the traffic to take the detour around the interstate. And from our experience, traffic, they're going to take the shortest route. And that's the mile each way. These two gravel roads really got hit hard. And they eventually dust controlled every house, which was appreciated. Their previous policy, they'd only dust control official detour routes. So we were able to convince them to do these houses at least. But in the summer we had, just it didn't help things as dry as it was. So after a few weeks and all the dust control, I think the residents, and some of the traffic goes down after time when they realize how dusty it is even taking the road. It went down too.
I noticed they're now open up to the Gilbert turn-in. So
they did just open it up to Gilbert, which will take a lot of pressure off Grant Avenue, and that's important. But it will put more pressure over 170th to go up this way. But hopefully 1 to 2 weeks they'll have the whole stretch open and that project will be done. Moving on to some of our projects, completed projects this year already were the E18 box culvert, which we got done before the 69 project, so that helped. We got the Fernald stub completed, asphalt overlay, and McFarland Park stub asphalt overlay. That was our last bonding project, and Lisa did have to carry some money over into this next fiscal year to get that paid for on how she budgeted capital projects, but the bonding money was there. She's going to have to amend to get that in to this current fiscal year. But that will be the last expenditure of bond money. Two projects yet to be completed this year would be the Shipley Road pavement here. That's just an asphalt overlay, but there'll be a lot of culvert replacements. So we're going to work with the landlords that live along there on keeping them up to date on what direction they have to come in to get to their house. And the other project is the 590th Vetter stub off of Highway 30. We'll get paved this fall. There's four smaller box culvert projects on here. Those were just completed design. We're working on buying the right-of-way, and those will be let this winter and be spring or summer construction of next year. Currently working on design of Milford 7 Bridge. That's up here, this area right in here. That'll be a December letting. That's on 170th. And we're currently buying right-of-way for that project. It's pretty well designed, and it should be constructed next summer. And there's one right-of-way contract on the board agenda this week for that project. We're currently working on design on North Dakota. There's two projects on North Dakota over here. One is there's a bridge we're going to replace, hopefully with a box culvert. Working on that, and then there's a pavement reconstruction on this north-south stretch that I'm going to hit a little bit later in this presentation.
How far is that from that little utility, what I call it, a power station or something there, you know, where the railroad track is just north of there where we used to...
Right now, we're not addressing that area. This is much further north.
Much further
past
north.
The curves.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay.
I have a better picture of that later here I show you. Another item on the agenda today was our annual report to the DOT. That basically reports to the DOT how we spent all of our funding for the year. To wrap it up, we did a good job of spending the money we had budgeted. We were within, I think, 1% of what we budgeted, so we got our money spent. A good thing is the revenues came in higher than we projected for the road use tax. Some of that has to do with the Time 21 fund. That's not very predictable, so we did get somewhere around $175,000 more than we budgeted for revenue. So that's a good thing. So hopefully in this next budget session, we may need to increase our budget to spend down our carryover balance a little bit more because it keeps building. When we do our annual report, we also print out our stats from our, it's kind of our complaint card. You can't read this. I'll read it to you. Top part is our drainage district expenditures. Past couple years, it's been $50,000, $48,000, $50,000. It dropped down to $42,000 for the previous fiscal year. Some of that's due to the flooding we didn't have. It doesn't have the impact on the tile. Some of our other permitting type items we had 95 driveway permits, 352 moving permits. That's way down from the wind farm days. We had 600-700 moving permits. Road closure resolutions are up 63. That's due to the maintenance type of construction we're doing this summer. Wanted to point out our complaint card section down here. It's typically been 500-600 complaints we get that are severe enough where we have to write up a complaint card or work order. This year was way down to 211. A lot of that's, of course, weather dependent. We didn't have the flooding, and then we had a pretty good winter. But I'd like to think some of that's due to our efforts in maintenance. Drainage district complaints were way down to 18. They're usually 50-60. Again, that's the non-flood type of year we're having. Dust control permits, 282. That's down from 360 over here before the recession. The recession did knock down the dust control permits by private owners quite a bit, but it's starting to build its way back up to 282. Before I get to this slide, I wanted to point out you had bridge inspection contracts on the board agenda for approval today. That was a major increase over what we've seen in the past. We were expecting some of that, but not quite this much, and there's a couple of reasons behind that. One, the DOT has implemented this new SIMS program. It's a software you have to use now to import all your data, and it's turned out to be very time-consuming. It was in effect the first time our last go-around with our consultant, but they really didn't realize what they were getting into, so we didn't see the increase last time. They're kind of making up for probably what they lost in time last time to do that. But another major increase was they now have to inspect our fracture critical bridges, which are our bridges with steel beams underneath. There's a new requirement that has to be hands-on. They have to actually touch that beam. The only way you can do that is if we have to rent a snooper, which is the big arm that puts you underneath the bridge. That alone is going to cost probably $10,000 extra than what we've done in the past. So,
and you can't get one of those little bungee cord type things there and swing someone underneath there a little bit.
There's multiple beams, so you have to move that, and it's really no other way to do it unless you have a ladder long enough to reach some of them, but most of them, the ladders won't reach. And if the water's high enough, you can't do it anyway. So it's something every county's dealing with. But we've been right around $35,000 for a lot of years, so I was expecting increases anyway. But this bumped us all the way up to $59,000. We've seen other counties' contracts. They're all dealing with the same thing and the same increases. So
through the County Engineers Association, I'm sure this is more something that has been an increase recently, but have counties talked about going together, maybe three or four counties that are contiguous, and maybe buying something like that so they can then share it themselves as a cost saving? Or is that still going to be...
The equipment, the snooper itself, right. That's something we're kind of getting a discount by using our consultant out of Ames, who does Ames inspections too and some around for the DOT. So that when they get it in, they're going to do all those at the same time. So there's going to be some cost savings with that. But yeah, other than that, working with other counties, they have different consultants and stuff. So that'd be hard to work out. But we budgeted $40,000 up to $59,000. We do have some leeway we have some consultant dollars that we can cut back in other areas just to get through this year. But in the future, we're going to have to look at probably some additional budgeting costs for that item. There was a new federal transportation bill passed. That's the good news. Bad news is only 2 years. It takes them probably 2 years to even start talking about a new bill, so they need to start talking about a new bill now. It takes that long to get one done. I wish it would have been longer, but initial numbers are that funding won't be decreased all that much. Stay pretty similar to what it is now. The programs changed a lot, though. So we have STP funds, which are for roads, and the BR funds for bridges. They eliminated the bridge side of things, but put that funding in the STP side. So the funding amounts didn't change that much, but how we go about doing it's going to take a lot of work with the DOT, because the bridges were done on a statewide basis before in a spreadsheet on who was borrowed ahead. What that does is it moves it into SERPA, the bridges side now, and how they're going to get that the state all reconciled and brought to zero to bring it to a region, it's going to be difficult, but we'll get it figured out. The other program, that not necessarily eliminated, but they did away with it, transportation enhancements, the scenic byways, trails, and safe routes to school programs, put them into one program called Alternatives, but the funding for that was cut by at least 35%. And how we're going to apply for those projects is unknown at this point. So there will still be some funds there, but how we apply for them, I don't know if it'll be through our region or statewide or how at this point. And we've talk, Rick, about our country club project. It could have an impact. Nobody's been able to give me an answer on that yet. They're working on it. Since that was FY13 money, that new program affects that FY13 dollar, so we don't know if they're still going to be there at all or if they're going to be reduced by this 35% or how it's going to work, but I'm trying to get an answer as soon as I can on that.
Find me. We're coming forward to our board. Is it next week we're coming forward to talk about the
next week a resolution was going to be presented to the board for increased funding from the county side for Country Club Road. In the meantime, I've been working with Manass to try to update our estimate. That's over a year old. Asphalt prices have went up, so there's going to be an adjustment there, and there's some issues with how they're going to mill the side off of the existing pavement. They're trying to get me some better numbers so you have the best numbers you have before you entertain that resolution next week. But, yeah, that's – are you working with the city to come up with that resolution? Okay. Yeah, that's the plan, to discuss that next week. And lastly, with the new bill at MPO, the threshold population, it stayed at 50,000. They initially thought Ames might get dropped out, but the bill was originally planned to keep to bump it up to 250, and that's how the funding levels were put. And then at the very end, they put it back down to 50. But so there is some talk that because of that, MPOs may get more of the funding now than they did in the past because of that glitch. But nobody's been able to tell us how much. So while funding stayed the same, the counties may get less than we did before because of that. But still remains to be seen how much. Next comment, unfortunately, the new bill did not address the funding side of things, the revenue. Similar to states, the fuel tax isn't keeping up with the budget. So the federal fuel tax didn't increase. So they passed the bill with the funding, but they don't know how where that money's going to come from yet. So same issue the state's dealing with road funding. I want to comment on 600th Avenue. We had the meeting a couple weeks ago. One thing that came out of that was adding 600 to our farm-to-market system. The next meeting, statewide meeting for that, is December 4th. I need to have a resolution passed at least a month before that meeting. So right now I plan to have that on a board agenda for approval. At this point, I talked to the chair of the committee. We're going to make an attempt to add it without taking another road. Since it's just 1 mile, usually it's more than that when they get requests. Since it's just 1 mile segment, we're going to try it that way. We got the time. If it doesn't work, we can always come back again and say, well, we'll get rid of another mile. But he thought it might pass with just adding a mile, so that'll be the first attempt.
Well, does the reality that it is a farm-to-market road make any difference at all with a group like this?
It'd give us more options in the future if things change, but no, it's not going to add any more money to our system. It just allows...
No, I wasn't even asking about adding money. I was asking about as far as going in and saying, hey, this is clearly a farm-to-market road.
Oh. I think that's going to have an impact on their decision, yeah. That's why I think it's going to have a good chance of getting through without having to take something off.
Part of that, and if it's designated as a farm-to-market road, there is the funding tie that is more available if it's basically being designated, in other words. Is that correct?
Yeah, but we won't get any additional funds. It'll just allow us to spend the funds we already get on
funds
that road
for,
if
yeah,
you
exactly.
decide to. But,
right. So, yep. Shifting. Okay.
One comment, we did hire a new engineering tech to replace Austin, who had left early this spring. Brian Moore is our new employee from Fayette County. He's working out well so far. And I want to remind you, Drainage District 10 meeting tomorrow night.
What time is that, 6?
Yeah, 6 is what I've got on.
What are you expecting?
At 6 o'clock, yeah.
I'll come back at the meeting in Des Moines.
What's your expectations on that meeting?
I wouldn't expect a lot of people to show up. It's a needed repair. I think people know it, and the cost isn't real high, but so I don't expect a lot of public participation. So,
yep.
All right.
Lastly, I wanted to address a few road-related items that I'm going to need some board input on, and maybe think about while I'm going through these how you'd like to go about getting me the input on it. You want to go out to these sites sometime as a field trip, if the board's comfortable doing that, all board members at once, or if you want each item addressed as a separate board agenda item, but be thinking about that when we go through these. This is the first one. It's Maxwell S27 pavement here. This was realigned at one point, so this road is actually paved. If you consider it pavement, it's in real rough shape. We need to look at milling this road up and getting rid of the pavement, essentially. The issue that's come up, this is a brand new house was just put on here. This is a really old historic house, but this is a brand new one. So we need to look at how far we want to leave the pavement, if any. And the same thing down here at this end. There's a house right here. So if we want to leave a stretch, that's the condition of the existing pavement. It's getting extremely rough and almost to the point we could may not even need a mill. We might be able to rip that up with a motor grader, but that's how bad it is. But that's the main thing. I need some input on if we need to keep these stretches. They're going to need some attention fairly soon with a new overlay or something. But
where are the field accesses?
There's one right here. But in the process, after I get some input from the board, we'll definitely be sending letters out to the property owners here, because it really only affects the people in this area, because everybody else can go right around it.
Right.
But we'll send them letters out, tell them what we're thinking about doing, and give them some notice. And
well, and I'm even looking at it and question why it doesn't. We don't consider it becoming level B. And I'm not talking about up where the houses are. Clearly, you got to be able to get from the pavement down to the houses. But I'm talking about just the north-south stretch in between all the fields. True. Is there any reason for anybody to be on that road except for access to those fields?
There really wasn't for the north-south stretch.
Just that one little stretch.
Yeah, well, that's something we can definitely consider. And we also want to get rid of this Y situation here. That's bad, so we're going to straighten that out. But no, that'd be a definite possibility.
Okay.
I have another one on here. Yeah. Level B possibility too that I want you to consider.
Okay.
This is North Dakota. A better picture of this. This is the stretch here that needs reconstructed. It has no shoulders on it. It gets a lot of high speed traffic.
That's Cameron School at the top.
Cameron School Road. This is the first curve. There's a house right inside of that first curve. That's what I'd like the board to look at with me.
Okay.
I've had some initial discussions with the property owner, and right-of-way negotiations are confidential, so I can't really talk about that, but the chances of getting any property there without going through condemnation is very slim, and so the board will need to decide out front. The board will have to pass a resolution saying that you're going to approve condemnation to do this project, but I think you'll be able to weigh that better if we get out and look at it, and I can show you what the impact would really be on this property. If we decide not to do that, we can at least do the north-south stretch and get that improved. But the curve is the issue for right-of-way. This one's more of an FYI issue that we're dealing with this year. It's a new thing. This is south of Ames. This is State Street that's paved coming south of Highway 30. And then it turns to gravel here. This stretch, quarter mile, and this whole mile are institutional road. The county does not own this road. Everybody assumes we do because it's a gravel road out in the country. We have an agreement with the state. It's actually Iowa State University because their farms are out here. They own the roads, but we have to work through the DOT to come with an agreement. We maintain it for them. We can't put rock on it without getting approval from Iowa State University. It hasn't been too big of an issue in the past. We get paid for the maintenance side, and then if we put rock, they pay us for the bills for that. But this year is the first year that Iowa State has dust controlled that whole mile. The problem that's created is the road really went to really bad shape. We got a couple rains and huge ruts. They had spent a bunch of money on dust control. They didn't want it touched, but yet we were responsible for the maintenance, and we were getting all kinds of calls. Normally, we would blade through dust control if we felt there was a safety issue with the road condition, but it's not our road. That's not our call. The state said, no, you're not blading it. So we didn't blade it, but yet we're still tied into the, I would say, some liability there if somebody gets hurt on a road. Just last week, we put a bunch of rock on it because we had the new application dust control come in, so we put rock on it before that and got everything up to shape. But we'll see how this works out next year again, but we're kind of caught in the middle of a bad situation.
And you're documenting all the different work and everything that is being done there. But, yeah, it's definitely something we ought to add to the discussion.
Do we have any other gravel roads in Story County that are state?
No, this is it. just that quarter mile and this 1 mile. And it's really increased traffic with this new facility out here. That's a big new facility out of state.
Is there any appropriate way through signage to designate that this is not a county road? Questions concerning this road, here's who you call. I mean, it's not a private road. Because it's a state entity that controls the road. We have maintenance responsibility, but we don't get to make the call on when we go out and maintain it or what we do. And I'd just like to see some kind of signage, you know, at both the north and the south that recognizes the county doesn't control this stretch.
I'd have to think about what that signage would say. That's a possibility.
I just want credit and blame to go where it's deserved.
Yeah. And us maintaining this road is optional for it. We don't have to do it, but it's always worked out well in the past, and this just happened to be a bad year.
Put a big question mark and put R. Sanders on there. it does make sense, Rick. I mean, it does. And as it ages continually and there's potential work that needs to be done, and you're talking about the potential liability issues that need to be addressed, there needs to be some way that, we can address who is really responsible to determine the level of work that needs to be done, you know. So, yeah, I think it's...
It was just the dust control added a new wrinkle to it this year. Responsibility
without authority is a terrible place. And it sounds to me like right now we have the responsibility without the authority. Right. And if we are carrying any liability at all on this, I would suggest that it's a terrible deal for us.
Right.
Seems to me that on campus, Iowa State controls the roads. They have gates and arms. And so now I'm looking at this road, and I'm viewing it as no different than a road on the campus in terms of who controls it. So I'd just like us to think it through.
Is it mostly Iowa State as far as their farm group going to and from that's using that, or is it also used by the general public?
Oh, mostly Iowa State, because this is the main South Elwood University now.
Right.
That's how most of the through traffic is going to go. Used to get a lot of people cut over here on State, but now that we got the interchange on 30 and the improvements on 30, most people stay over there. Probably not a lot of people use that as a through route.
Yeah,
I just wanted to be aware of the situation right now, and we'll see how it goes next year.
Okay. All right.
This is the road I'd also like you to consider for possible level B. This is down at Cambridge, Skunk River Bridge. This stretch of road right here, this bridge right here is posted really low. I think it's 3 or 4 tons. Motor grader cannot cross it. So mainly creates issues for us in the winter, snow removal, because we can't get turned around. And, like, there's no houses. It'd be a good candidate for a level B road.
Who owns the farm ground, or who farms the farm ground north and south of the? I assume that's some kind of little stream feeding down into the Skunk that we've got a bridge, or a drainage ditch that we've got a bridge going over right there.
Bridge is right here, and this is actually the bike Howard of Iowa bike trail too. So there's two structures actually. This is a big box culvert we actually drive through. We call it the hole in the wall. Farmers, I don't think, can get a lot of their equipment through that anyway. Plus, the bridge is posted, so they can't go over the bridge either. But might be a good one if we get out on a field trip to show you what we're actually talking about. But
yeah.
What's the
process to take a road to level B?
The ordinance is in place for level B. All we'd have to do is have a hearing to add a new road to it. And I'm mainly talking winter snow removal issues here. And it's gravel now, and we'd probably reduce the gravel in the future, but it'd stay pretty much a gravel road for a number of years, even without putting new on it. This doesn't get much traffic. Another issue with the gravel road, this is Pleasant Valley Road. It's a dead-end road, quite a long one here by the interstate curve. It's on the inside where the DOT rest area is right down here. The issue is... Jim Cooper owns some property down at the end of this road. I'm going to zoom up here. Zooming up, this is Story County property, conservation park. This is Jim Cooper's property, and it's kind of a cul-de-sac down here on the end that is real isolated. It's a real issue with the sheriff department, with partiers, and Mr. Cooper would like to cut the road off somehow. Right, we have a bridge right here where that dot is. He'd like to cut access off, right, put a gate. I told him we can't do that on a public road. We'd have to vacate the portion. That would create issues with him having legal access to his property. Conservation is reviewing this to see. They don't do much out here at all, and they have similar issues with rangers having to deal with partiers and stuff like that down here. Maybe it'll vacate this short stretch, put a gate. He could put a gate here, then if he wanted to, that'd still allow us access here. But this is pretty isolated from the bridge down with trees, and so it creates a where they can hide. Once you get up to this point, it opens up quite a bit, so I don't think you'd have as many issues with people going back there. Something we need to consider. Conservation is going to get back to me on what they think. And
well, conservation doesn't have the ability to close down a stretch of
no.
No, they won't, but I don't want to cut them off from getting access, public access to portions of this. But they have a driveway just to the north of the bridge now, but they need to get to the property south of it. But if we vacate it up to here, we'd almost have to give him an easement through conservation property to get through there. So that's something conservation would have to consider if they'd want to allow that too. But it'd be ultimately up to the board what gets vacated. And
he has no access from the north? Who owns the property just to the north? Because he's got his house down in there somewhere.
Technically, he does own through here, but this stream comes through. And he owns back up to the road up here, but I think his house is up in this area.
You can see his house from the interstate.
But that stream would cut him off to that property, which technically wouldn't make him landlocked, but this is a separate parcel, so technically he could sell that to somebody else, and that would be landlocked then if it came to another property owner, and that would create a problem for the county, because then the county would have to get him public access somehow.
So you want to sell that piece of property to conservation?
It didn't sound like that. But we'll continue to discuss with him and conservation, and maybe we'll have a recommendation for the board at some point.
Yep.
Oh, this is going to be more part of our 5-year program discussion. We had a request. This is North Winery's over here, West 190th,
right,
Prairie Moon, and you head up north and it's paved and it stops right here back to this subdivision. There's currently 4 lots right here that can be developed. He's considering selling those and wants to know if the county would ever consider paving up a little further. But like I told him, that's something we have to address on an annual basis as part of our 5-year program. And we'll put it in our wish list, but whether it makes it in the program or not, and I can show you there and we go out there sometime. But we definitely want to pave through these curves because they're really tight and that creates a safety issue. But maybe consider going up to here. We do have this stretch scheduled to be overlaid next year, but it would take a lot greater thickness of asphalt to go brand new pavement there. Just another paving project to consider. But with most of those, that would be open to having a field trip with all you together, or just address these as items on the board agenda?
I think we need to just handle it like we have done in the past. We need to post it. We need to make it's available, so if the public, anyone wanted to go out and we'll be a part of that. But I think it's helpful if we can all kind of see that and just look at the wherewithal. So.
To me, the most first on the list would be the North Dakota, how we want to address the right-of-way on that. So if it's something you think you'd want to see in person, the impact we'd have on that property.
Decision is actually going to be made during that field trip. It's mostly a sight and see to look at the issues that you brought, and then we'll it makes the, when we come back and relook at the pictures again, it makes it a lot more meaningful and able to understand it a little bit.
So, yeah, that one in particular is hard to get across to what the impact of that property would actually be if we have to condemn
it. That's the house that has, like, the grassy berm built into it?
It has. It's the house is kind of built into the ground, and there is kind of a berm there.
Right.
We'd be getting about halfway through that berm with the back slope, and some major trees would have to come out. It would have an impact, definitely, on the property, so... but that curve, it has always been a safety issue, and the property owner lives there is well aware of the safety problems, but yeah, it's a balance. Is it worth condemning it to increase the safety on that curve? That's all I have for right now.
Okay. Well, I'll see you on Friday. I'll be a little late getting there, but I think it's 10:30 for you guys and so forth, so...
Yeah, I'd just leave you with Darren. I have real interest in exploring level B on the two that we talked about, the one down by Cambridge and the one over by, you said, by Maxwell, right? I need to go drive that one. I'm not familiar with that one.
Yeah, that's north of Maxwell, a couple miles, a mile and a half.
All right. Yeah, I'd have real interest in exploring that further.
Yep. All righty. All right. Thank you. And moving on to liaison assignments, just briefly met with Deb Shilroth yesterday morning. Most of it we were talking about preparation for her presentation to Ames Noon Rotary yesterday, where she did a phenomenal job, in which she really kind of highlighted the redesign and what challenges that is presented with redesign that not only Story County but other counties are following. She also updated me just briefly to let me know that the work with Richmond Center and the budget or their completion of their audit is moving forward. They have received notice that it's been finalized, and now they're just waiting until it be presented to their board. There is a couple questions yet from the state regarding some of the questions that they had asked, but she says it seems like things are moving forward, and hopefully she'll be able to present something to us here quite very shortly regarding that. Then we just kind of talked about the redesign or the meeting with other counties, member counties. We had a meeting here a couple months ago, and that was to start the discussion regarding counties that might want to come together and talk about services that were provided. She's scheduled to meet today, I understand, with Polk County. Polk County had sent a request to ask if Dallas and Warren County would be interested in coming together, even though Polk is probably in a position to ask for the exception. They at least wanted to explore all options, so I told her I thought it was still good for us to be able to look at all of that. I don't think there's any interest on the part of Polk County to become part of a greater, larger entity, including some of the smaller counties. And then there's always the question of whether some of the other counties that have initially started discussion with us would want Polk County as part of that as well. But that is still going on. I think we'll hear more about that at a later time. And then she did mention that the asset panel is meeting this week, Thursday evening, I believe it is, to discuss they would need to vote to approve HRDA being able to become part of the asset process. And very similar to the precedent that was set with Homework in some time. And so after that occurs, depending upon the outcome, if they do vote to approve that, then it would be brought to the Board of Supervisors for final approval, as well as the other joint funders and so forth. So that was pretty much the gist of that discussion. Next is the public forum number two. Any items? Not on the agenda. Announcements from the supervisors.
Pass.
Very quickly, and I'm sure, Rick, you'd be interested in this.
Just received, and normally we don't acknowledge these, but I thought since this was an action that we took as a county, this is a copy, enclosing a copy of the City of Ames resolution approving the Urban Fringe Plan Amendment to the Oaks Public Golf Course. So now that everything has been approved by all of the jurisdictions, they're set to move forward. So I just wanted to acknowledge that. The resolution is here. It will be on file here at the county. I've given a copy to Stacy and so forth, but I just wanted you to be able to see that as well. And then I will be in two conference calls coming up. One is with HRDA. We are having a challenge with Christian Opportunity Center. Their director has stepped down as far as a transit operator, and so they're looking for some alternatives and other options. So our executive board for HRDA will be talking about what our next steps might be regarding the information from Christian Opportunity Center down near Pella and Indianola in that area, Oskaloosa. And then tomorrow I will be meeting with a representative from DHS along with the ISAC folks to continue the ongoing discussions about mental health redesign in Des Moines at 1 o'clock. Okay.
Outstanding.
All right. So with that, I'd entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second. It's been moved and second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
The meeting is adjourned.
Thanks, Darren.
Good.
Okay. Luke, you doing anything fun? You covering any good stuff? Or just stuff like this?
Okay.
Now I know you're fibbing. What other beats do you have besides us? Okay. Now we've got a big trial going on from Cedar Rapids over in the... you spend any time with that, or since it's not local, you don't mess with it? Right? And they... Uh-huh. Well, I saw that it was Malloy who was following President Obama, right?
Malloy and Hannah.
Okay. And so what did you pick up Ryan down at the state?